life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
You are listening to the Tatami Galaxy episode of the Dynamite in the Brain anime podcast. I am Brian Smith, and as ever, over there is my co-host, Anthony Askew.
Hello.
And today we are joined by Aaron Long and Elliot Page.
Hello.
Hey.
Wishing for a rose-coloured podcast. So, the Tatami Galaxy is an anime from 2010, directed by Masaki Yuasa and based on a novel by Tomihiko Morimi. And here's the synopsis. I think I got this off the Funimation site.
This sounds like this synopsis, but go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know about the synopsis.
When a college dropout stops for a late-night bite at a mysterious ramen stand, he crosses path with a self-proclaimed deity of matrimony. This bizarre meeting sends the young man hurtling through a horrifying flashback to his not-so-glorious college days, where the influence of a cruel new friend turned him from a hopeless romantic into a mischievous black cupid. This is not correct.
Well, let me just see where I get this from. Maybe for 10 minutes it's correct.
To be fair, the show is hard to follow, but it feels like they only watched the beginning of the first episode.
Well, maybe that's the great plan, because sometimes you have synopses, especially for anime, because marketing is hard, apparently, where like it's like, oh, look out for so-and-so dying, and you're like, what? That happens 26 episodes in. What are you doing? Knock it off. Like, don't do that.
You're weak. You're weak, these kids these days. I've been watching Rockford Files, where every episode starts with a recap of everything which is about to happen in the episode.
Yeah. Is it like Japanese movie trailers where, like, these are the seven samurai, these are the ones who die? It's like, what? No, knock it off.
Japanese trailers is back. If you look for, like, 70s trailers...
Oh, yeah, totally.
Everything, yeah.
Battlestar Galactica does that, and I had to close my eyes at the start of every episode.
Always
shows you stuff that's going to happen. It's crazy.
No, like, always skip previews. Always skip previews. That's my mantra.
That's the lesson.
Yeah, this is the official description on the Funimation site, and also it's on the Forbidden Planet site, describing the Tatami Galaxy box set.
So okay,
that is the official description. It is wrong.
It's official, but it's official.
Maybe we all just misunderstood the show.
So confusing, yes. What it is about a second-year student at Kyoto University continually reliving the first 2 years of his life at school, when whichever club he chose to join turns horribly wrong for him 2 years into his school life.
Hmm.
I think that's about it.
Yeah, and his inability to grasp what's dangling right in front of him for a recurring line.
Well, yeah, and it turns out by the end that, yeah. And the other key is that it's a first-person narration, so the main character has no name, he's just I.
Which took me, like, 7 episodes to realise. I was thinking, I've heard his name, I'm sure.
Really, Anthony? Really?
Seriously, I was like, I know his name in my head, and I would go through the other characters, and I'm, no, it's not him.
So, I feel like I had a weird sort of, like, I don't know, this show brought a degree of relief to me, a la, like, Muscle Balm or something, where I've been watching Monogatari, like, the Monogatari mythos, or whatever the hell it is now, the amount of it, but this was kind of a nice balm, because that has the whole first person, although he has a name, main character who rabbits on forever, and this show is 11 episodes, and gets to its point, and has the whole main character doesn't shut up, but goes through a bunch of sequential arcs, but it's way faster and way more enjoyable. And I was like, oh man, this is what I wanted Monogatari to be. And now I'm just stuck watching like dozens upon dozens of episodes of like asshole character. Whereas this is like, oh, cool. I got the bit I wanted. Weird. I didn't even know I needed this, but hooray.
So yeah, the novel itself is first person as well, but as I say, by Tomihiko Morimi, directed by Masaki Yuasa and written by Makoto Ueda, who is a member, a writer, director of the comedy theatre troupe Europe Planning. One of their plays, Summertime Machine Blues, he adapted into a film in 2005. That's the only other thing of his I've seen. It's very good. Go and watch it. And the director of that film is the guy who's going to be in charge of the Fooly Cooly TV anime. Other things he's done is Go Find a Psychic, about a TV producer who finds a bunch of real psychics for a variety show at Christmas. Fly, about a man who finds a very useless rubbish alien. Dragon Braves, which I think is a TV series about a group of 20-something slackers who discover they are descended from dragon hunters just as a dragon attacks Tokyo.
That sounds amazing.
That sounds convenient.
It does. It does.
And well. Yuki-pon no Oshigoto, which is an adaptation of a manga of the same name about a drunk, unemployed woman who orders her cat to get a job instead of her. And in the TV show, the cat is played by a man in a giant cat suit.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Yeah, that's pretty much the best.
That's a wide spectrum, I feel. Yeah,
I don't think any of those are in English, unfortunately. The only thing you can see in English, I think, is Summertime Machine Blues and this of his. But I would like to see more of that stuff. Between this and Summertime Machine Blues, I quite like his writing.
What's Summertime Machine Blues?
It's about a club. I think there it's like during the summer. They're like, I think there might be a tennis club. And the key of the thing is the air conditioning breaks down, and so they use a time machine to go back in time to try and fix it, and then it causes all sorts of problems because they're using a time machine to try and fix an air conditioning unit, and they've got to try and avoid running into each other. And stuff.
Was there anything that you found in common with Tatami Galaxy on that?
No, because I would get that. Well, obviously the time looping thing, but beyond that, not so much, no. Because obviously this
no
is...
No stylistic stuff.
Yeah, taken from something, somebody else's material.
Right.
The protagonist is played by Shintaro Asanuma, who was Devilman in the recent Cyborg 009 versus Devilman. He's more of a Akira than Devilman here. Ozu is Hiroyuki Yoshino, who was Kazuma in Kimono Zume.
Whoa, what a change.
Yes. Akashi is Mayo Sakamoto, who I know mainly from Hitomi. There's Hitomi in Escaflowne, but she's in loads of things and loads of songs.
Yep.
But I still, my main memory of her is on the live-action extra, which is included on the DVDs. It was on the Laserdisc originally, of basically the woman who plays Pikachu and... I can't remember the guy's name. The guy who plays the older brother in Escaflowne. Basically just teasing her, because it's like in a bar setting and she's 15 at the time. So they're just picking on her mercilessly.
Sounds cruel.
Then you've got Higuchi, who's played by Keiji Fujiwara, who is AC/DC in JoJo's Battle Tendency. Jogasaki, who's played by Junichi Suwabe, who was Terence Trent. T. Darby, or Terence T. Darby in Stardust Crusaders. Definitely not Terence Trent Darby. And Haneki is played by Yuko Kaida, who was Agnes in Tiger and Bunny. Those are things... I'm trying to pick things that we've talked about previously on the podcast now.
Who on earth's Agnes?
She's the
controller lady who runs the TV show.
Oh, right, right.
And does a very good job in this show as well. So it's like, oh, yeah, you're cool. I like your work.
So what is our history with the show? For who of us was seeing this for the first time?
Kinda, I suppose. Full admission, I use this podcast as an excuse to actually watch the thing because, I had the Bees release that I bought on DVD ages ago, and I watched the first disc of it about a year ago, but I couldn't kind of deal with the power speed up and like how fast it was and how much I had to pause it to read, and was much weaker back then. But now I thought, okay, I'll just pick up where I left off because I remember all of it because it's a very memorable show. And it sticks in your head a bit. So I was like, okay, I'll just pick it up and carry on. So I just carried on for this podcast, watching it over the weekend.
How about you, Anthony? Was this the first time for you?
It was the first time. It certainly was, and I didn't know anything. I just remember seeing the protagonist and Akashi. That's all I remember seeing of any artwork or anything. I literally knew nothing. I didn't know whether it was going to be fighting. I don't know why, but I thought it was like all about gods and stuff, like gods and like demons and stuff like that. I don't know why.
Maybe you read that synopsis.
Maybe that's where it was. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that threw me for a loop, but. Yeah, I mean, should I say what I think now that I've watched it?
Aaron, have you seen this before?
I Yes, that's the short answer. I saw the first episode when Funimation originally put it up in 2010 or whenever it was. But I was very turned off by the fast narration. And so then I ended up watching all of Masaki Yuasa's other, like Mind Game, Kimonozume, and Kaiba. And then I came back to this one.
I've got to go back.
Well, I'd kind of been putting it off, and then I ran out of his other stuff to watch. And I said, all right, I'll give this another shot, the fast narration thing. And so I watched it once a few years ago, and I thought it was pretty good. But then this time, I watched it on 90% speed in VLC player, and I understood it so much more. It worked so well.
I never thought about doing that. I have to say, I saw it when it was first coming out on Fansubs. Then I bought the Bees release, and then I watched it via VPN on Funimation's site. Weirdly, that is faster than actually using the official UK Funimation site.
Not surprising at all, given that site's problems. So,
Obviously I remember people saying, oh, they talk very fast. That was the main criticism of it the first time round. And I dealt with it the first time round. But I have to say, watching it the second time round, didn't really notice that they were talking that fast.
Hmm.
Maybe I've just got used to reading subtitles faster and faster.
Yeah, I got to admit, like, after watching that first disc last year and finding it a bit much, like, going back to it now, much easier. I don't know quite what changed. Also, maybe I just, yeah, I maybe it's kind of got over it.
The worst episode.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, that and the 10th one. Like, the 10th one goes back into, like, motor mouth syndrome of, like, he got stressed out, so now he's sped up again. Oh, crap.
Yeah, because the dialogue isn't that fast. It's always just his narration, his inner monologue. Yeah.
Oh, totally,
the episodes where it's mostly him talking to himself tend to be the worst ones in that respect.
I say this got a release from Bees in the UK, and it's due to come out again in the UK shortly. If you want to travel into the future, or maybe by the time this episode comes out, you'll be able to get it, as it's coming out on Blu-ray, isn't it?
Yep, Blu-ray only, I think, if I remember correctly, because of requirements for the DVD release. But yeah, it'll be on Blu-ray without the power speed up. Thank God. It's only 4%, but it does kind of make it, yes. It takes it beyond the pale from, oh God, to nope.
Yeah, that would be pretty hard, yes. You can pre-order it now for £55.
Yeah, I think it comes with some stuff, but at the same time, you can wait on it like with the current Ping Pong release, which has now come down in price.
That's exactly what I was doing. Keeper.com, very handy. Yeah.
That's the point. Have you seen Ping Pong before, Aaron?
Yes, when it came out, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I just wanted, because we went through the previous Yuasa stuff, so I just wanted to check on that.
Oh, yeah, I've been making a point to watch everything he does.
Yeah,
I
same.
I keep looking out for news about his new movie thing, but I haven't seen too much yet.
Yeah, I feel like my introduction to Yuasa was through, what was that 5-minute short he kickstarted about the wrestler?
Kickheart.
Yeah. That's the first thing I saw. And it was really funny, because I watched a room full of people, and they were like, man, that sucked. And I was like, that's great. Yeah. To be fair, the people who got really upset were the people who backed it on Kickstarter and thought they had spent too much, whereas the rest of us who were watching it scot-free were like, hey, this is rad. So, whoops.
I hope you set fire to the room after that.
Yeah, that's a silly room.
I backed it on Kickstarter and loved it.
Yeah. Well, okay, you're the one exception, Aaron. You took all the goodness from them, I guess.
Absolutely.
I wanted that digital download and the poster.
Knew what I was going into. Now, the T-shirt. Now, that's another matter. I've got plenty of complaints to say about that T-shirt.
the grey one that just says, heart kick hard or whatever it says.
And after two washes, the logo was already coming off.
Oh.
Yeah, I see that at cons, and it looks like a 10-year-old band T-shirt, I swear to goodness.
mine's holding up pretty well, but I don't wear it out very often. Nobody knows what it is.
That means it's safe to wear outside, though.
Yeah.
It may disintegrate.
I've been working one-piece hoodie today, so...
Was the hood like Luffy's hat or something?
No, it's the Heart Pirates one, the one which has only got the Heart Pirates logo and the bear on the back.
Mm.
There's an enclave of One Piece fans in like our goods in department at work, and it always freaks me out when I go in there, and they're all wearing One Piece T-shirts.
Okay, back to the TV show. So, yeah, that is our history with it. What do you think of it now? Let's start with Anthony.
Well, I get the criticism about the dialogue, but I like it being quick. I like to feel lost. And that sounds totally silly, but it's nice to know that I might be missing stuff with this, which I know sounds counterproductive, but it's kind of, you get thrown into this journey, and by kind of missing bits and not understanding everything completely, you kind of feel like you're part of it as well. And so I appreciate the fast dialogue. And if I ever watch it again, it means I get an extra, you know, I might pick different things up. So I praise the fast dialogue. I think it helps the context of the story of this, you know, this boy kind of, because he doesn't know what's going on. He hasn't got a bloody clue.
No, that is
and I didn't have a clue for ages. I thought, like, well, he was Ozu, Ozu was him, and, like, they were, like, demons and...
Oh, yeah, wow, that's a real weird way to look at it, dude.
I thought it was like a Fight Club thing where they're the same person or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought they, like, were competing against each other. They, that was going to be the end of the series, whereas they'd been like these spirits from God knows when, and they've just been repeating. I don't even know.
Say, yeah, weirdly, that is part of the story. Not that they're spirits, but they are repeating things that people in the past have done. But yeah, the point is that he isn't paying attention to what's going on in the story he's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But to say that, I really enjoyed it. So I really, really enjoyed it.
How about you, Elliot?
Yeah, I really liked it. As mentioned, I've got this weird thing where I watched the first four episodes, and after the episode about disciples and the proxy war, got a bit kind of like that. I kind of put it down after that because I was a bit tired and I didn't really like the whole proxy war thing, and I thought that was going to carry on. But I did enjoy it a great deal, especially when it got to the later half of the series where you had the like three episode arc from episode 6 to 8, where it was more directly three layers on the same time scale, but with different amounts of attention paid to what was going on and what choice he made. I mentioned earlier at the start of the show and kind of jumped the gun that I felt like it was kind of the version of Monogatari that I wanted, and also a lot smarter than Monogatari, I suppose, and less sort of outright daft. But I kind of enjoyed the fact that it almost seemed vaguely, and I might get castrated for saying this, but it felt like a good version of a VN, like, anime, where instead of it being like, choose a lass, ha ha ha, here's a 2-episode arc about her, oh, she's dead, whoops. It was much more about, no, here's an actual layering of stuff, where it's a time loop, but not explicitly a time loop. And when you, I think the moment when it all kind of clicked for me was when you do see beardy main character looking through the wall at a different character who's in the middle of being hunted down by a pyramid scheme. And it's like, oh, this all makes sense. This is fine. And then you get to like the end of the series where I'm like, okay, I get it all now, but can you hurry it up? Like, the penultimate episode for me was kind of interminable because I'm like, okay.
Oh, that was one of my favorites.
That's the point. I know it's the point,
but I'm like, man, you're spending a lot of time to get to feed me a single crumb of something here.
I could have watched 11 more episodes of him wandering through those rooms.
No. I did like it when it did, but the payoff of it was good. Like, when he, like, finds his own sack of money, and it's like, oh, this makes perfect sense. Like, oh, that's where that money came from. And none of it is, like, I understand you, Anthony, saying you're going to get lost in it, because that makes perfect sense. Because, as you say, the main character himself is lost. And then you and him both find accidentally the whole point of it anyway. And you're like, oh, that's where all this bullshit comes from. And, of course, that you do have, one thing I did like especially was kind of the role of Ozu, the weird, like, demon-looking main, like, second character who looks like a yokai or, like, a weird grinning onion face man. And he turns from this, like, really oppressive influence in the first few episodes into kind of being an afterthought. And then at the end, you get the whole thing of, like, oh, who's the real dickhead? Is it the Ozu or the main character when they change faces very temporarily?
I think the point is that Ozu is actually the main character of this show all along.
Basically, well, yeah, that is...
The main character didn't realise that.
Yeah, that is my last note, especially when it's like, oh, Ozu was just an idiot in love. Weird. Like, who'd have thought? Because Ozu does way more stuff than the main character because he's paying attention.
Oh, yeah.
So, Aaron, what about you? What is your... Where is it placed now? You've watched it at 90% speed.
Well, I actually, one thing, I mean, I loved it. I'll get that out of the way. I liked it before, but I think it's rising up through the ranks of what my favorite works by Masaki Yuasa are. Still probably not my favorite, but it's up there. But anyways, one thing that I noticed with this rewatch that I thought was kind of interesting is that it's partly deliberate, that sense of being lost. I mean, They go through a lot of new information very quickly, and then they'll recap things that you already know in some of the later episodes. I mean, yeah. The first one, everything is really confusing. But in, say, you know, the third or fourth episode, they'll blow through a new concept really quickly, so that you are a bit lost, and then they'll introduce it properly in another episode.
Yeah, like the air balloon theft.
Yeah, yeah. The first time you see that, it goes, it happens so fast, you just kind of go, what's going on here? I don't understand. And then it becomes clear when it's supposed to. So I felt like the show was looking after me as a viewer a little more than I had realized earlier. Yeah. It was always sort of at the place where it wants you to be, you know?
Yeah.
In terms of understanding.
Yeah. I'm going to say it is my favorite of his TV shows.
But
I haven't seen the end of Ping Pong yet, so.
Oh!
Watch Ping Pong.
Yeah, Ping Pong.
it's more disciplined than Kaiba and Kimono Zume.
Yeah, it feels like the most solid of his works up to that point. Maybe both, not Mind Game, yeah, but
both in
of his shows.
In the written story and also the visual storytelling as well. I think that's more solid throughout.
Yeah, I think it's because it has a very defined sort of boundary almost of what it wants to do.
Yes.
Like, it's both a geographical and a, like, actual character and a place sort of boundary around it, where it's like, no, everything in here is what I look after, and that's what it kind of works within.
Yeah.
I will say, a bit like Cobra and Kimono Zume, it's probably still three episodes longer than it needs to be. But but I think because they turned those three episodes into like a mini story of its own, it still works.
Yeah, so you can chop three from this.
I think you can chop those three episodes. Of,
oh, that's my favourite?
Yeah,
I like them, but you don't need them for the overall story.
Which three? Which
I
three?
The ones where he's deciding the girls?
That's...
I don't know, I think that really gives the whole thing a texture, and especially like makes him more than just talking head man, even though he is talking head man in that. But hey man, you're gonna throw Johnny in the trash? You're gonna throw the fucking, like, you know, I forget his voice actor's name, but the guy who does like Virao in Gurren Lagann, and he's like his friggin' penis yelling, and it's like, yeah, this is a bit relatable in a way that I probably shouldn't admit on a podcast, but hey.
But I still enjoy it. But I'm saying, I mean, partly because those are the bits which aren't from the novel. Those
yeah.
Are the bits which
oh, interesting.
Clearly
I was going to ask about that.
We've put them in to make sure we hit the 11.
So if you were pushed, those would be the three.
Yes, yeah. I think if you're pushed in for time, you can skip those three, and the story will still make sense by the end.
I like that there's a mini arc within an already very short show.
Yes.
And I think episode 6 is one of my favorites, because it's got the most happening. I mean, if those episodes were once one episode, I think it would be a fine one. But 7 and 8, nothing too much happens in either of those in comparison. All the action.
6 is the one with the drunk scene, isn't it?
Yeah, that one,
yeah,
I love that.
Amazing.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah, I think 7 has a grand total of like one, maybe two plot points that you actually need out of it. And the rest of it is kind of just retread to show you what the cycle is. And then the 8th one is the one where it goes, oh, by the way, here's the whole deal behind the letter writing thing.
See,
maybe you should pay attention.
That was so sweet.
No, I agree. I really like that. But I mean, the whole point of that is just to say, hey, maybe the main character is kind of his own problem here. Come on. So, but yeah.
I like the fact that the sci-fi in it is very low level, to the point that the characters don't realise they're in the science fiction story. And only one of them does right at the penultimate episode, suddenly. Oh, this is science fiction. This is happening to me.
But that's kind of the best way to do it sometimes. It's just like, yeah, this is just reality, except it's gone a bit wrong, and that's kind of all you need. Whereas if you go, oh, we need the biochips, it's like, oh, who cares?
And I like the way it pushes against even the fiction of the reality with the bits, with particularly with the fortune teller who he meets for the first time each time, but she's continually putting the price up.
Yeah, and he notices that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the bit. That's one of my favourite bits. So I feel like when you first see that happen, when she goes, "Oh, 2,000 yen," it's like, ah, okay, this show is totally smart. And then of course it does the whole. He does the exact same phrase. I forget the wording of it, but whenever he wants to turn the clock back, he says the same phrase, and you get that, you like the clock swing back animation bit.
Oh yeah, this
why
is
it called the number 4?
Repeated phrases. Hmm. Oh, I was reading about that online. Number 4 in Japanese, I think it's
death.
Yeah, I forget what it, I think it's she or something
she,
like that.
Yeah, she.
But it sounds like death. So it's an unlucky number, and 8 is the other. The big hand is at 8, I think, and the little hand's at 4. And 8 is supposedly the like a lucky number. So it's just between good and bad luck, basically.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Hmm.
Interest.
Right, let's get into more spoilery stuff. So we've, anyway, yes. So in short, I liked it. So everyone should go and pre-order it now, or wait for it to come down to 30 quid in future. Like I did.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, yeah, so it's 11 episodes, four of which are based specifically on the four chapters or episodes of the novel. That's episode 2, The Film Circle, episode 4, The Proxy War episode. Number 5, The Softball Circle, which really is about a cult that he accidentally joins, the Softball Circle. Turns out to be a cult slash pyramid scheme. And episode 9, The Secret Society Lucky Cat Chinese Restaurant, where basically he becomes the villain of previous storylines.
Mm.
And from what I understand, the episode 3 sort of focuses on the Birdman Circle towards the latter half of it. And that is from the novel, but I think it's interspersed throughout the other episodes rather than given its own separate one. That is what limited information I understand. I don't know whether the ending is from the novel or not, or whether that's original to the anime.
I was going to say...
I feel like it should be.
I think the ending is somewhat original. I don't know. I haven't read much of the comic.
Is the in from the novel? Because obviously the novel's just gone for 4 because it's the 4 full mats of...
The tatami mats
in his room.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether the ending's supposed to be like the half mat.
Half, right. Because it needs an ending.
It does.
I would be very annoyed if I read.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, right, so now what?
Yeah, without the ending, I don't know if I'd like the show very much.
Yeah, I feel
but
like
it ties everything together so well. In such
I feel
great
like the most
way.
Important part of the 9th episode is mostly the main character is Ozu, and it's his love story, really. Yes. Not the failing one. Well, the one that actually resolves at the end. I do actually like at the end of the series, it goes, hey, the relationship between me and Akashi, but that's not important, bye. And it's like, oh, actually, that works fine.
So it was really simple to resolve. It would not have required 11 episodes to resolve.
Yeah, it would have required him to pay attention, which, again, is the whole crux of main character's problem. But, yeah, the 4th episode, because I feel like the actual requirement of the penultimate and ultimate episodes is one to resolve the framing device rather than the content itself. Because I feel like you could do the novel itself and be like, yep, here's 4 arcs, maybe a bit of back and forth. And that's kind of done, because this is the arc of Ozu and the main character being an idiot. But then because of the way the show has kind of built itself up and presented you itself, it's like, okay, we need a bit more here to actually explain this nonsense.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know whether that's in the novel or not. That I couldn't glean.
Yeah.
But I definitely know that those are the 4 episodes specifically from the novel.
I'm curious whether... Masaki Yuasa was drawn to this because it had sort of a similar theme to Mind Game, or if he did add that himself. Because the overall story of a character sort of being trapped in this situation until they have this revelation that they need to grab life by the balls, sort of, is very similar. And the ending of this isn't that different from the ending of Mind Game. But in that case, I know he created that ending for Mind Game himself. It wasn't in the book, really. So I think he may have done a similar thing here.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know for sure.
Yeah.
my favorite bit about the ending is the fact that the slow realization that Ozu is doing everything in every world. That he's like part of all these clubs and all these activities. And that's how it all fits together.
Mm.
Whereas the main character can only focus on one single thing at a time. And, what's he's always looking for?
Raven-haired
maiden.
Yes, that's it, yes. And you got all these recurring elements of each episode where he selects a circle to join. There's the first contact, worst contact, when he meets Ozu for the first time. Then he'll find the fortune teller, sometimes the fortune teller will actually have to intervene.
Hunt him down with a little motorized scooter thing.
And then there'll be some sort of flashback of how he found the soft toy that Akashi's lost. Which tends to be different every single time, I think. There'll be the shot of it dangling from the ceiling that he's forgotten about. There's, like, the proxy war occurs in multiple episodes, not just the one where he's directly involved in it.
And most of them he goes to the Neko Ramen?
Yes.
Yeah. He eats a Castella.
Yeah, he's
What is one of them things?
It's a sponge cake.
Yeah, it's a sponge cake.
It looks
cake
so squidgy.
It's a sponge cake made with without butter, and instead it has syrup, I believe, or honey in some cases.
You can look it up one by the end of the show.
Yeah,
it looks pretty easy to make, honestly. I looked it up, and I have the recipe. I have the ingredients. I haven't made it yet.
Is it like one of those old yogurts that you used to get when you were a kid?
No.
Do you know what I mean? You know those brown yogurt?
I know what you mean, but what? Where'd you get that idea from?
Because that's it looks like.
I guess the animation of him cutting it.
Are you thinking of a caramel pudding, Anthony?
Caramel.
Rather than a yogurt. If your mum was telling you they were yogurts.
Well, I would eat them as a yogurt. They would come in like a little yogurt pot. Google caramel pudding. I know what a caramel pudding is, dude.
I know what it is. That's why you just...
Does everybody know? Okay, I thought maybe...
Describing. I would never...
They're in Canada as well? I don't know.
I don't know. A yogurt.
I like that you say it was a Castella, but I used to eat it as a yogurt. I used to eat pizza, but I would eat it as a hamburger.
Oh, that sounds well good. I'd do that.
When you said brown yogurt, I think I'm never eating somebody who gives me a yogurt and it's brown.
Well, okay, so that's what he's eating, and it looks very... I'm a bit kind of disappointed it's so syrupy, though. Yuck.
It's not got that consistency. I think that's mostly Yuasa's animation making it look that weird. It's just a sponge cake.
Yeah, the other things which recur, there's the stolen airship, the making of the movie to discredit the head of the movie circle.
One thing I like about that, especially the movie one, is how it becomes very sort of given that it's happened. Like, after you, when you see it in the episode it appears, you're like, oh my god. And then afterwards, you're like, yeah, he's having sex with a doll. Well, he's not having sex with a doll, which I think is the most scandalous thing, but like, it's like, blah, and then off he goes. So I like how those things become given, and by the end, you're like, yeah, I get it.
But it's the realization that Ozu's making that
everything.
Regardless of whether, the main characters involved or not. And then there's the overdue 2000 Leagues Under the Sea as well recurs numerous times. Because early on, when in the part where they get drawn, they're disciples of Higuchi, like the first thing they mention is he's there. They run interference for the librarians. And then later on, when he joins the Secret Society, he's the librarian chasing for the overdue book.
Oh, yeah.
What other notes have I got? I think that's all. Those were all the recurring elements I could think of. I'm sure there's even more.
Oh, there will be.
Yeah.
There are some. Yeah. There's that turtle brush thing, which I think turns up like three times, but that's it. The book fair, but that's more of a plot
element. There's some point where somebody asks Akashi a question, and she gives them a sassy answer.
Yes. I like her secrecy. Like that's.
What did you do on the weekend? Why should I tell you that?
It's like part of the attraction is her not falling for any of these guys' attempts to get any information from her.
Oh, I was in love with her. I was in love with every character. Like, all the women in this show are just perfect. Even the doll.
The drunkard dentist lady was pretty great. I like her. Because I was expecting her, just as I was expecting her to become, like, a bit part character, she gets an episode to herself. I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, thank goodness. it does have one shot in the show where it's talking about showing characters from different perspectives in, like, episode 10 when he's going through the different rooms. And then it does the whole, characters being embossed over each other. I think it's the film dude. And I'm like, you just summed up the entire series. Good job. But it made perfect sense. It's like, okay, this is the whole point of all this, is so you get the characters as a whole.
Image.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he feels like a villain in the second episode, and then you kind of get to know him through the other episodes.
And he's great.
He's still a weirdo. Like, let's not give him too much slack.
Well, that wall in his house.
Him and Higuchi are weirdos.
Yeah.
They're like the thing about mature students, because they've been there for 8 years apparently, presumably they're 26.
I must admit, like, the show reminds both of that, the eight year student and the like creepy club that does nothing, reminded me of my own university, where I knew a guy who'd been there 7 years and didn't give a crap, and I also knew a group which basically existed to be a hookup club, and there was no actual club activities whatsoever, and it was like, what do those guys do? It's all that socializing, they just make it up so they can get budget. And that was the whole, and I was like, oh yeah, but then that's the whole cult angle, and I'm like, okay, maybe not.
But yeah, I mean, it's the thing. I'd like the fact that they seem wise to the younger students, because they junior students did when I was 18.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once you reach the age they were, you realise, oh, I knew next to nothing.
Yep. You should try living. Yeah, now I live in a university town. It's like, man, all these 18-year-olds are idiots.
That's why I could never understand why people didn't understand Mike from The Young Ones being part of those four characters, because he's the mature student character.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's the cool one. He only seems cool to those three other idiots.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Like the Fonz on Happy Days, too?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
He's so pathetic. He hangs out with high school students and lives in one of their garages.
What a loser.
The rose-coloured ideas of university life is also a thing, I think. Not didn't suffer as bad as this guy, but I think I had the idea that, oh, I'll go to university, I'll be surrounded by free thinkers, when I'm actually surrounded by drunk engineering students.
Yeah.
Ah, so true. So true.
Now, do you feel the sense of time being modern? But it seemed like this fashion seemed earlier.
I never picked up on fashion. That's an interesting point, though.
I mean, I picked up on the main character's shirt because a Kyoto like shop sponsors his shirt, I think, if I remember correctly. It's in the like credits where it's like, oh, so and so shirt, and I'm like, what?
maybe the fashions are just more on the ball than most anime are. Because obviously it's very, the bicycle places it firmly modern. The one he spends all the money on and then gets stolen before he can erase it. But also, he's like, his glasses made me think of Harold Lloyd. Big round glasses.
It reminded me of Madarame.
I think everyone being pale as well made me think of black and white movies.
Yeah. It's a very French art house cinema.
Yeah. But I think Akashi kind of looks like a silent movie heroine as well.
I love those.
Ozu looks like a yokai.
But he does in the last episode. He changes. He's human.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, he's probably human all along until the main guy finally.
We get a hint that what we're seeing is just the main character's view of things. Because there's the bit where he sees the movie guy being carried down the street in a throne. And it cuts to him just being dragged down the street by his boss.
He's drunk. See, there's bits like that I missed. I'll be honest, I missed that. And God, yeah,
at some point, don't we see the main guy with the yokai eyes that Ozu has in like the last episode?
Yeah, is it the last episode when he's visiting the hospital?
The villain.
Well, I think it's because the weight of attention has turned. Rather than Ozu sort of predating on the main character, it then becomes the main character cornering him and going, ah, ha, ha, tell me about your girlfriend, ah! And, you know, that's
also
the...
Also, because this is a guy who he's only really met for the first time in this hospital.
Oh, yeah, in that world line. Yeah, that's when... Yeah, it's hard to remember that at times. So it's like, wait, what's going on? Oh, they don't know each other this time, because he was stuck in his house.
No, he's just this weirdo who seems to know a lot about Ozu and attacked him nakedly.
Hey, saved his life, whatever, deal with it. Be grateful.
Higuchi looks like a cartoon.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah, with his giant goiter.
I like the bit when Hanuki's describing him, sort of saying who her boyfriend is, and just sort of mimes out his chin, and that's all the explanation he needs.
He's so handsome though. Like, he pulls off the big chin really well. Really well.
I think, yeah, and Jogasaki comes across, his design comes across as well as the narcissist that we see him at first as in the movie episode. And then, of course, I forgot the creepy guy's name.
Oh, is it Ajima? Hang on, yeah, I've got the Wikipedia pulled up.
I think that's the guy.
Yeah, Aijima?
Yeah, he's like
the guy with the buck teeth who runs the secret society, the Lucky like Cat restaurant. Yeah.
I didn't like those episodes as much.
I wasn't a big fan of this. Yeah.
But I really liked, I quite liked the one where he's in the secret society, because there's that really good shot of Ajima on the table, and it makes the sword he's carrying around like the mouse's tail.
Oh.
So he looked more rat's tail, probably more accurate.
I think he was in, he sort of cameoed in maybe episode 2 or 1 of some of the early ones, but you don't
get much of an introduction to him until 8 or 9.
Yeah, I think that was the main point, because he was like secret society man. His undercover sort of power.
Yeah, because he is like body language is very different when he's in the film circle.
Yeah.
So it's like almost you go, oh, that way's the same guy. Yeah, because he's the one who pulls the plug on their filmmaking antics, isn't it? So. And I guess they probably blame Joe Gasaki when it's actually Hajima doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
Doing what in the first place? Doing?
I think he's the one who tells them to stop making their stupid short films.
Ah, those short films are pretty good. They're doing a damn good job.
They were very short filmy short films.
Yes. Yeah.
I like the fact they got one. They were going to do one about a man trapped in a universe of 4x4 Tatami rooms, but that's already been done.
God, there's so much happening in 11 episodes.
But it doesn't feel like you're being overwhelmed, which is the best thing about it, honestly, rather than it being like, oh no, look at all this like 11 episodes of crap I got to eat. It's a lot better about it.
Yeah.
I like the fact all the characters are colour-coded, and it sort of drives that home in the opening credits, so you're already instilled with the colour-coding for...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Character. Oh, yeah.
The other thing I've got... Oh, yes, I've caught with the Noitamina test. Does it work... Would it work as live action? It's a lot of
I
those...
I don't think so.
See, I think it would work as live action.
In fact, I don't want to see it as live action.
I think it would work as live action, but I think it'd be lesser given the sheer, volume of the... We haven't talked about the visuals at all, but, like, the sheer volume of design and, like, framing would... And it even includes, like, live action stuff. Like, I feel like it would lose a lot of texture if it was live action.
Exactly.
It would work.
Yeah.
But it'd be a lot more boring.
Unless the live action has animated bits instead.
Or it's all on the green screen.
Yeah, if you did it as live action, I think it would need to be pretty effects heavy.
But my point is that a lot of the Noitamina shows, at least early on, were things which would have worked as live action, but instead they chose to make them.
Oh, all right, I see.
And in some cases, as well as live action, like Nodami...
Cantible.
And Moyashimon, bizarrely. That one did have CG fungus and viruses and bacteria, though, didn't it?
This show does have live action in it, I just realized.
Yeah, tons.
Yeah. It's already partly live action.
Yeah, that's enough. And it's live action show
as
in
this. As far
as
I want it to go.
Yeah.
No, see, I think, I was surprised that nobody had adapted the book into live action. Because I'm pretty sure if you just stuck to those four worlds from the book, you could easily make a film out of it.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is, if the ending is fresh to this, maybe people would, like, we can't do this, it doesn't have a good ending.
I think it'd be different audiences, you probably wouldn't need to worry about
that. Or the ending might be the same, we just don't know. So, anything else to one thing I liked was how I quite like the gag with Akashi's call being blown when she sees a moth.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that also that it's used sparingly enough that it's funny every time. So you
it happens like 3 times total or something. But each time it's really funny because she just goes to absolute pieces. It isn't like a shudder, it's like her face implodes or something.
Yes. Jagged lined and arms flailing everywhere and almost like a completely different character design.
Yeah, it's really fun.
I like they do that with the main character, too, when he gets nervous about things. He becomes very jagged and geometric looking.
And the scene where they're in the bathhouse where the other characters run through the wall and he can't. And he hits the wall. What's the deal with that? See this? I don't even know.
Oh, speaking of bathhouse, did you guys watch the specials?
I didn't, unfortunately.
I haven't watched the specials, no.
They're pretty... Did you watch them?
No, yeah. I haven't watched them yet.
Did anyone?
I watched the second one, which is, I think, the one with that bathhouse bit. But that was the only one I could find because I just had some technical problems with the specials. But
I watched them all. They're pretty good.
They're on the Bees DVD, if you've got it, somewhere on the third disc menu buried deep within.
I would recommend watching them because it kind of becomes Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou at one bit. Like one of the shorts, but it's good. It's weird. I guess they're more weird than
stop motion fish. You mean?
Oh, if only. Yeah. If only.
That was the only film to make me cry at the sight of a stop motion fish.
That's such an emotional film.
and the war category with one nominee.
I want to mention something, actually. Aaron said on Twitter that you can't marathon this show. I think you can.
You can, but it might wear you out.
You think you can?
Yeah, I
was struggling to... Well, not struggling. I was enjoying it. But I don't think it's a good show to marathon because so much of each episode is, in some cases, the exact same scenes as in the previous episodes.
I feel like there's a case to be made for it where like the layering of it really helps if you are watching it in bulk. Like I watched it a while ago, I watched the first disc in one set, but then I just took a break. So, you know.
You will hit a point where you need a break.
But I feel like the layering of it helps to belay that, because even if it is the same quote thing, it's presented very differently and it fits in with everything else very differently. It's not like they take a scene and plop it straight back in again.
That's true.
It's not Endless Eight, thank God.
I think I watched it over 4 nights. So I watched maybe 3 or so episodes every night. And so that might have been kind of my ideal way to watch it, because I think watching it quickly, it does help you make sense of it. Like if I was watching each one every week,
I might have
been very confused. Yeah, you forget things. But I did, especially I was watching it after work late at night, and I started thinking, I just saw this, didn't I? I was getting a little sleepy.
This was easier to marathon than Welcome to Arabi's Office was.
This is a much better show than that. Much better show.
This is really good. Anything else to add, guys?
Oh, I wanted to ask, I might have missed it, but was the Neko Ramen stand ever connected to the Lucky Cat restaurant? I was expecting them to, because it seems odd.
Because they connected it to Higuchi and and Jogasaki.
Because they were part of the same year.
Yes.
So, yeah, small world.
I don't know.
Because it seems odd that there would be 2 cat-themed restaurants.
Yes.
I feel like that might be the one red herring in the show that doesn't really lead to anything else.
Yeah. Mm.
I think it's more a connective thread for the older generation, because there is a certain element of, you know, repeating yourself type dealy.
Now, do you think they were using the cats to make the ramen, though? That's what you suggested.
Definitely.
Who cares?
Do you actually see a cat?
You see a cat in a bowl.
Yeah,
and it's, whenever they mention, oh, maybe they make the ramen from the cats, and you see the cat in the bowl,
yeah.
I think that's like their sort of, like, you know, little cool they have.
But also it seems to attract cats, because in the long shots, there's often cats wandering around in the foreground.
Oh, right. I want to rewatch Ping Pong.
Well, we will get to it eventually.
Yeah, you should. It's really good. I watched it recently for a review, and it was bloody great.
I think it's my favourite.
Yeah, I think Ping Pong is still kind of Yuasa's number one for me, at least. Although this is pretty damn good.
I think Mind Game's still my top Yuasa.
Yeah,
this is up there. They wrote on Anna Pages one time that I kind of agreed with, that I think he does work at his best in a feature length thing, because all of his shows feel very like they almost would work as a feature.
Yeah,
just
a
little bit too long.
Yes.
You know?
Or they're writing them and they haven't figured out where they're actually going, in the case of Kimonozume.
I think with Kickart, he said he wrote it, he was thinking of doing it as a feature or as a 12-episode series, and then it got condensed to 10 minutes.
Jeez!
Yeah, it definitely gives, that Kickart definitely gives the scale of a world that lives beyond that very short take on it.
Yeah,
that thing is so dense. But he's doing another feature, so that should be good.
Good.
Ooh. Good, good. All that... Crane Shin-chan money coming in.
Would you climb the boob wall? Because
I explain to the listeners what the boob wall is.
I will certainly. It's quite a simple task. It's my honour. Well, potentially, you know those climbing walls that you'd see in like a gym, or where they're made up of different shapes of circles and like grips. Well, imagine one made of breasts, different kinds and different Different kinds of breasts. I don't really know how to go deeper than that.
I'm a normal one, let alone one created by a pervert in his own house.
Well, you would certainly stand at the bottom and test it out. Just for climber's sake, you know. Safety first and all that.
I think he establishes when they introduce it that each breast corresponds to one of his classmates or something.
Oh, that's right. Oh, God, yeah.
That's gone wrong.
He's been cataloging all of their sizes and shapes and stuff, and then he's made this poop wall.
He's a scientist. He's doing the gods.
That's not the kind of science you should be.
No, I agree. I completely forgot how creepy he is in that episode.
He really is.
That's like, totally brushed away.
When he keeps popping back later as someone who seems very reasonable, if rather weird and grinny, you forget that Guy is a pervert.
I mean, he's multi-dimensional, but he's definitely a creepy pervert.
Oh, yeah. Like the love wife. That's it. That's the phrase, the love wife. It's not a sex doll. It's a love wife.
Yeah. I mean, you learn more about him, but it never explains away his previous behavior.
He never uses his actions with
before. Exactly.
Unless he's been driven insane by the proxy war, which is where... isn't it like how many seasons before? There's like
at least 12, I think, from watching them count up.
It's like, two students got in this war ages ago, and then each time after they've left university, they've picked someone to carry on this war in their stead. But it's basically them playing pranks on each other.
Yeah.
And so...
mostly painting things pink.
Yes. Higuchi and Jogasaki, the film circle leader, are the current proxies, and then in the show, they're basically picking out the protagonist, Nozozu, as their proxies for the future.
And they've probably been doing it a while, since they've both been there for 8 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Apparently learning nothing, because we see Jogasaki's grades, and they're terrible. And...
oh, yeah.
I thought Jogasaki was like, he was only there 4 years. Was he actually another eight-year student?
Yeah, they're both eight-year students, yeah.
Wow.
Because they're all the same year, because Haneke actually...
oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I forgot.
The guy from Nekorayama graduated.
Yeah, because no matter how many times I saw them, I couldn't put Jogasaki in the same age bracket as them internally. I'm like, huh? But, yeah, it turns out he's also a loser.
Yes. And Higuchi, we have no idea whether he actually goes to any classes at all.
Yeah, he doesn't. He was like me at uni. I was like him, which is probably not good. But... I want to mention the drink scene as well. I brushed over it earlier, but that drinking competition is the best scene for me in that show.
I agree.
I love all the stuff where he's wandering room, like to each room again and again and again. That is amazing. But that drinking scene.
Yeah, the best individual scene for sure.
Yeah,
it's also very real. Like, I don't know, that is what it's like when you go on a bender and you have some like tolerance built up through being a drinking student, and so you say, "Yeah, we're going to go paint the town red," and then, oof, you know, and off it goes.
I don't know how the protagonist keeps up, because he's 8 years younger than the other guy for a start, and age does help. And he strikes me as not being good with drink, but he does well. He does
6 years, isn't it? Because isn't it when he's within his
2 years? Oh, yeah, it's 2 years after.
It's 2 years in each episode. I love the way the animation, every time it shows them taking a shot or a drink, it gets rougher and rougher.
Again, very realistic.
Drinks like that. Yes.
Yeah, it captures the feeling so well. Yeah.
Great scene.
I also love, I think it was in that episode, when they do it a few other times, but when Jogasaki falls down. They speed it up and replay it.
Oh,
like
yes,
a sports replay?
Yeah. Oh, but there's one thing I need to mention about the boob wall again.
Let's grab
that episode, because that episode really... it's like, what is going on anyway? But that is just such a weird episode. When he's drinking the baby's bottle...
oh, yes. Like,
nipple fixated.
Yeah, and I was like, ugh. Like, that's even worse than the boob wall. I just think that's
possibly the most disturbing.
So I think you've picked which character you're going to cosplay.
I would be Johnny. Is it Johnny as a cowboy?
Cowboy.
The penis cowboy.
Yeah, I would perhaps do. I wouldn't do it. I don't know.
You should go as Moshigoo, man.
Being that Revoltech Woody figure.
Oh yeah. Maybe there is a through line there. That's too perfect. I don't know, maybe you should go as Mochi Goo Man, Anthony.
Which one's Mochi Goo Man?
He's the hammerheaded, like, mascot thing with the giant eyes.
The one that he has hanging in his room.
Oh, the one he dresses as when he's doing a hero show.
I totally forgot about that, and that's, yeah. There's a lot of cosplayable characters in this, actually, the more I think about it. Not that many people would recognize them, I don't think.
People might recommend. I thought I had recognized that thing from something else, and then it turned out it was just kind of a very typical mascot.
What's its face from Paranoia Agent?
Paranoia Agent, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a very similar thing.
The pink thing, yeah.
Yeah. But it's just kind of a classic looking mascot. Yeah. Sort of.
How good is the ending theme?
Very.
It's really good. Whenever that kicks in at the end, that just jump to the end, it's amazing.
Yeah, the music was really good throughout. I thought
tons of good stuff, and especially when it breaks out the piano, and it's like, okay, here we are. This is good stuff.
I think there might only be like 5 or 6 different musical pieces they play in the show.
I think there's 4 main themes that get replayed and sort of chopped around, but I feel like there's a certain amount of motif going on. But they are different tracks, but they just sound the same.
But they work really well.
Yeah,
this was around the time where everything seemed to have an Asian Kung Fu Generation theme tune as well.
Yeah,
it's a good theme tune.
It is a good theme tune, yes. For your information, Revoltech Woody came out in July 2010, so this Penis Cowboy predates him. Around about the same time they would have appeared, but obviously would have been animated earlier.
There's just something in the air that year.
Well, I suppose the toy would have been sculpted earlier. Maybe they were feeding information back and forth between each other.
There was like a perfect agreement in Japan of like, hey, Woody, we can make him look like a pervert, right? Right?
They may have both been part of the secret society.
Or they remembered the old 90s joke of somebody saying their kid brother was saying, I've got a Woody and a Buzz.
What joke's this?
It was a thing I remember people sticking in their signatures as a, this is a funny thing I heard. I'm claiming that I heard my little brother say.
I like that.
I see. Terrible.
Right. If that's it, good show. The Tatami good Galaxy. Show. Remember to go out and buy it, or like me, wait until you can afford to buy it and then buy it. I've already bought it once already. It can wait a second time.
Yep.
It's time to play a game called Have I Got News for You Are To? I'm going to ask you.
Oh, man.
So I've got 7 questions here. I'm going to ask you, and they all have a numerical answer.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to jump in by saying your name and then say the answer. And then the other two people get a chance to answer as well.
Is there a threshold on the numbers? Is it between 1 and 10, or could it be like 30?
There is no threshold on the numbers, though some of the questions will give you an idea of where the numbers may lie.
Okay.
I'm not just asking you to guess random numbers.
If only we had that soundboard so we could make buzzes.
I know.
Soundboards are the best. They need to be everything, everywhere.
I would require everyone to have mixers they could feed soundboards into. I'm not buying everyone mixers.
I've got one already, I'm fine.
I'll make the sounds.
Okay, so just leap in with your name and then say your number, and then the other two can type in with their numbers as well. Whoever's closest gets a point. If there's two people equally close, they both get points, but you can't guess the same thing that somebody's already guessed.
Oh, so all three of us can just scream our number?
No, just say
our name.
This isn't a buzzing thing.
Right, okay. Then it will go to the other two.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, first question. How old are the dimension-jumping kids, Sashi and Arumi, in Magical Shopping Arcade Abenobashi?
Anthony.
Yes.
11.
Aaron. 12.
Elliot. 12.
No, you can't say the same thing as Aaron.
So. What? Ah, 13.
What?
That is a point for Aaron. They are 12 years old.
Ooh.
Yes.
Next up. In Space Dandy Episode 10... How many loops does it take before the gang realise that time is looping?
Elliot, 17.
Okie doke. Next.
Anthony.
Yep.
300.
Okie doke.
Aaron, 150.
Aaron is the closest. It was 100 times.
I knew it was big.
I was just splitting the difference between your guesses.
After I looked that up, I was like, I've got to go watch that episode again. I forgot how funny that is. But they are so stupid. They don't realize time is looping. Okay. Here we go. In Dragon Ball, which numbered universe is Beerus the god of destruction of?
Elliot, 7.
Okie doke.
Anthony?
Yes.
6.
Aaron?
Aaron, 4.
Okay. Elliot is correct. It is 7.
Oh, I knew watching Let's Go JoJo would pay off.
At the end of Full Metal Alchemist, Edward Elric.
Oh, spoilers!
Finds himself on the parallel world of Earth.
Headphones off.
But in what year?
Elliot, 1933.
Okie doke.
Has everybody
else? 2006.
Anthony, is maybe something to do with the year. I did genuinely take my headphones off. 1982.
Have you not seen the original?
No, I never finished it.
What?
Oh, my God. I'm scared now.
So good, man.
If you to the question, I would have put you out of your misery. okay. Elliot, you're the winner. You are 10 years out. 1923 here. Whoops.
I've never seen any Full Metal Alchemist.
Really? Oh, my God. What am I doing on this podcast?
Brotherhood?
Yeah, watch Brotherhood's. Brotherhood's the manga story.
It's the remake one, right?
It's okay. The correct version.
Yeah. I watched a big chunk and I love it, and I don't know why I didn't finish it.
I don't like Brotherhood as much as the original series. Maybe I'm a weirdo,
you're not the only one.
But full admission, I came to the original TV show first, and I really liked all the stuff it did later on that diverged. And then when they made the Brotherhood version, I'm like, I don't like it as much. Whatever.
I came to the first series first, and I liked it all the way up until the point where they started making stuff up. Introducing Scrappy Doo.
To be fair, it was over a decade ago since I watched it, so maybe that was at the start of my fandom. So let's leave.
There's a character who's basically the Scrappy Doo of Full Metal Alchemist in the first TV adaptation.
Ooh.
A lot of time is spent on a character who does not even come from the comic. Okay, during The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya season 2. A section of 8 episodes called Endless 8 involve summer holidays looping again and again. How many times in total do the characters experience the time loop?
Elliot, 14,537.
Wow. Anthony.
Yep.
4.
Aaron, 8.
Okay, Aaron is the closest, despite being almost 1,000 out. It's 15,532. Okay, next up. In Noine, to your other self, how many years into the future is the war between the two alternate dimensions, Lacrima and Shangri-La, taking place?
Anthony.
Yes.
1700.
1700 years, okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Aaron, 1200.
Ooh.
So this is between the second and third worlds, not the prime world. Okay. I don't know, 800?
No, 15. So technically, Aaron was the closest.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't that far, was it? Oh, damn. You wouldn't think I'd watch that a month ago.
And finally, here we go. This is to decide it for Aaron or Elliot, because...
I don't even have a point.
Anthony can spoil it and make it.
Oh, I want a point.
How many universes are there in the Slayers multiverse?
Aaron, 2.
Okay.
8.
Anthony, 3.
Anthony gets a point. There's 4.
I was actually going to go with 4 originally, but I wanted to cut Aaron off completely.
Could have been a slobber knocker.
All we know is that Anthony is the loser.
I wanted to make it tense. Oh.
Okay, anything to plug, Aaron?
Yes. I'm still working on that cartoon I think I mentioned last time, Sublow and Tangy Mustard. I took a break for a while, but I'm doing it again, and the 4th episode should be out in maybe a month, I think.
So by the time this episode comes out, it may be
yes.
In a week.
Okay. And you can find that by looking up Sublo and Tangy Mustard on YouTube. Or following me on Twitter. I'm AALong64.
Elliot, what do you got to plug?
Cool. I do podcasts, mostly. I'm failing at the writing thing, but yeah, mostly podcast for the UK Anime Network. If I can extend this plug, we're doing a live show at Scotland Loves Anime in Edinburgh on the Sunday at 10:30 till noon. The Sunday.
And what date is it?
Oh, God. Hang on. I can't do dates. Christ. The 23rd of October.
Okay. I'll make sure to get this episode out before then.
Oh, thank you. If not, it'll be hilarious and sound weird and dated. But if you are in Edinburgh, please come visit. It'll be wonderful. It's a free event, and there'll be prizes. Hooray.
Oh, prizes.
Anthony, what you got to plug?
Oh, well, I would like to plug my Jumanji synopsis that was posted on Twitter last night. It's going to be right.
But, it's legit good. I'd watch that film.
Yeah.
Jumanji?
Well, the new Jumanji, I decided to do a big synopsis on Twitter. What I think should happen and could happen. And I genuinely think it could happen. Anyway, so go to Twitter and ask you. And it'll be last night, which is the 20th of September. Spoiling the magic. YouTube, because I've been putting stuff on there. I'll hopefully have the channel name changed by then. I don't know. Right now, just... it's Seng 808 at the moment, which is TSENG 808 on YouTube. And Adventure Bastards, which is Adventure Bastards. Just search that on YouTube. And that's it.
Rightio, I'm going to plug my new Tumblr, animespacedisco.tumblr.com, where I'm posting various things I find for my future Anime Space Disco panel that I hope to run at some convention next year.
If there's any conventions left.
There's one.
Is this replace in the end? Or
I've stopped updating. Never end. I may update it one more time. We shall see. It involves me doing some work, though. So.
Oh, no.
I realised that as my never-ending in the end panel was fully scripted and I have a PowerPoint, I could probably just read out that script over the PowerPoint, make it a YouTube video.
Yeah, because the recording got spiked somehow. I forget.
It got spiked.
Well, it didn't get. It's got recorded, but as I understand, Team Neko were their account was falling into, risking falling into bad, whatever standing with YouTube due to claims.
Schoolboy error.
Copyright claims. I suspect I was mainly responsible for. Because they put up the cat panel, which was one of the two videos which got pulled, and that had the trailer. I played the trailer for Tiger Mask Double during that panel, and I suspect the soundtrack of that was one of the things which got matched because it's a show.
The thing is, they can fight that, and provided they're not monetizing it, and it is like an educational use to some degree. I think they could.
Oh, they can stick it on Vimeo
or Daily Motion. Yeah, you can find most of. Yeah, you can find most of wrestling on Daily Motion.
So no, you won't see any of the Amicon panels from this year on YouTube. So what that means is you have to make sure to come to conventions I'm doing panels at. You've got to see me live and direct to get the full effect.
When trains and hotels aren't as expensive, sure.
It's at the Kitcons at
Warwick?
Oh, yeah, it is. Thank God. Yeah, I should probably go.
Yeah, you got to go. January 2nd, I think the tickets go on sale, isn't it?
Oh, God, that's stressful just thinking about it.
Bye-bye Christmas money.
Well, not so much financially, just the whole rush for the con is like... Oh, man, I've been going to cons long enough. I should get first come, first served. Like, all the tenure people.
You should start doing panels then, Dopey. Like, that's how you get
tenure. I did. Adventure Bastards.
But that only works so far, Elliot, until the person who's in charge of the events leaves, and then your tenure vaporises.
Oh, yeah, because there's negative, like, permanence in the con space. We all know that.
Anyway, so that's animespacedisco.tumblr.com. Now we've finished putting the world of conventions to rights. Hey, you did a podcast about it, didn't you? You never talked about it on the this.
Oh, yeah. I should probably plug. God, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, so me, myself, and Ian, and Shenny. Ian's the... Is he the chairman? Or is he the he's, I've known Ian for a while, but I can't remember what his role is. He's a big wig at KitaCon. And Shenny is, he DJs a con. And we kind of just sat there and talked about cons for like 3 hours. And it got recorded and, put on a podcast. And I don't even know where you would find it.
Damn it, Anthony.
I will find ever. It. Where did it go? I'm sure it was on Sound.
It's on mixcloud.com/DJ Shenny.
DJ. And then, what's it called?
It's called Confusion Podcast, Episode 1, Pilot. Of which there's been no more since.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's going to be no more podcasts, is there? That's it. It's done.
Well, it was a good one. It was, I put some good ideas across to Ian that may get employed. So next con, if you get asked to say who you want to, like, kind of stay near in corridors and rooms and stuff like that, that's thanks to me.
What if I want to say who I don't want to be near?
That's thanks to me. That's,
You should rather have a list of people you want to be close to in a con. In the halls of residence, you want to put a list of people I want to be known.
Oh, it's a big list.
No, mine would be just one name. Right.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
That ends this week's episode of Dynamite.
You should have no shame, Brian. I'm surprised you didn't just drop it.
Be sure to stay subscribed on iTunes, Stitcher, Player.fm, or your podcast aggregator of choice. Next time on Dynamite in the Brain, Project Aiko. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ta-ta. Me.
Our life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.